Hey guys, what's up? Welcome back to Unpopular. You're gonna love today's show because it's all about Erica Jayne, but it's a different spin on what you've been hearing because I know that all of the podcasts have been doing their Erica deep dives weekly, daily, hourly for the past 12 months, and I've stayed away from it, but I've had Erica haters harassing me for days, so I just felt like, you know what, it's time to address the pretty mess in the room, and I don't think you're gonna be happy with what you hear, because you know what, we go over the facts and the Erica haters are not gonna like they're not gonna like the reality of the situation, I don't think. So I have Zach Peter on from the No Filter podcast. He has been doing a lot of fact-based coverage on the whole Erica Jayne situation, and yeah, the haters aren't gonna like this. And my gut's been telling me that you guys have been spreading a lot of misinformation on social media, because I get these long, exhausting messages in my DMs and on Twitter all the time, like ranting about Erica and with all these allegations and craziness, and I see it and I'm just like, okay, but you know, she hasn't been charged with anything, so something's not adding up here, because if she's as bad as all these things you're messaging me about, but she's not charged at all, and there's only, like, this lawsuit against her trying to get money back. So, look, we get into the legality of it all. We debunked a lot of the Twitter talking points, which was nice. Even if you are an Erica hater, I recommend listening to this. Not just to listen to me, listen to Zach. He is really across all of this stuff and does a really good job. I've been clear and open from the beginning that I'm not really interested in the legal mumbo jumbo of it all. Doesn't excite me. It's not why I watch Housewives. I also get into the Nicki Minaj's rapist husband and the latest on him, because the woman he assaulted was on the reel and it was crazy. And my interest in this initially, like, full disclosure, I thought that this was some kind of smear campaign against Nicki because of her vaccine comments, because, you know, I covered the vaccine stuff last week and, you know, Nicki's horrible, but I was definitely siding with Nicki on that, and I loved her slamming Joy Reid, and they definitely were, like, putting some misleading headlines out about Nicki, so I enjoyed her hitting back. And then when I saw that her husband's rape victim all of a sudden popped up on the reel, I was like, okay, is this the media doing what the media does? Because we all know that with, like, Me Too and just all these situations, when you speak out against certain things, the machine comes out against you. But I started digging into this, and there was so much more to this than I actually realized, and I feel so sorry for this poor woman and what Nicki and her fucking disgusting husband are doing to this woman. So I get into that. I don't think people realize, like, the depth of this, and I hope I actually explained it properly, because I sort of was making the notes for it last minute thinking it wasn't as deep as it was, and then I'm reading over the whole thing and I'm like, oh my god, there's actually a lot to this that people are not understanding. But yeah, look, I have been dealing with deranged Beverly Hills stans on Twitter for days now. It's beyond. I tweeted something about how I love Erica Jayne's music, which I do. I'm an OG Erica Jayne music fan for like 10 plus years, like way years before she was on The Housewives. I was like all across her music. I would YouTube her and watch her interviews from like Maximo TV. You know how Maximo TV goes to all of those events and they interviews people you've never ever heard of before in your life? Well, I would watch Erica Jayne Maximo TV interviews and I would think, who is this woman? How old is she? Is she 25? Is she 45? She definitely was an enigma. Her real name wasn't out at that point. Like, no one knew she was Erica Girardi, married to Tom Girardi. So she's someone that's always fascinated me, and I've kind of been a fan of hers for a long time. So I tweeted about liking her music, and then that set people off and people fucking whinging at me. But the main thing that really made people crazy was the fact that I like Lisa Rinna this season. I did tell Kate Arthur from Variety that standing Lisa Rinna is probably the only principled position you can take at this point on this season. I think she's done nothing wrong. I love her. But one of my mutuals on Twitter, someone I'm friends with, they tweeted something about how, like, you know, they hate Rinna. Rinna should be fired because obviously everyone's always talking shit about Rinna on Twitter. And, you know, I responded, Rinna carries Beverly Hills, something like that. Obviously it's hyperbole. Okay, it's stan Twitter talk. She doesn't literally carry Beverly Hills. Well, I mean, she does some seasons. Some seasons she really does carry the show. But at this point, I would say Erica Jayne is carrying Beverly Hills because the whole thing is about her. But You would think that me saying that to my friend, it wasn't even, I'm telling you, it wasn't on my main timeline. It was literally just a direct at so-and-so. You would think I tweeted the N-word or something, because for days and days, people are responding to it, quote tweeting me, he's delusional, Rin is trash, who is this idiot, who thinks Rinna carries the show, she hasn't carried the show since 5 years ago. Like, I had to mute it, it was relentless, and then I couldn't actually delete it, because I wanted to delete it to shut people up, but what happens if you delete it, then people, like the stans, they've already screenshotted it, you know, because they screenshot it so they can wait for you to delete it. Then you delete it and they're like, why did you delete this? Now he's backtracking. Look, we got him. So you kind of just have to leave it and ignore it. And it's like 3 days later, like I've moved on, you know, I'm trying to move house. I've got this other stuff going on. I watch other shows besides the Beverly Hills Housewives. And I log on Twitter and it's still ranting about Lisa Rinna. It's just unbearable. Then some fucking idiot left me a 2-star review on Apple and said that I'm faking defending Erica Jayne because I'm like trying to be unpopular. That's my trigger. People saying that I like fake opinions or feelings about things. I do not fake anything. So listen to this shit, seriously, okay? This is what this fucking idiot wrote. Trying too hard to be hated. The support for Erica and her horrible way of responding to the allegations is baffling. I think the host is trying too hard to have controversial opinions to honor the name of the podcast and is not being honest. I do like some of his takes, but it comes off phony when it makes no sense to support someone who's being horrible at handling allegations. Disappointing. Are you fucking serious? Bitch, it's baffling to you. It's not baffling to me because this is how I feel. You guys are so, like, you guys hate Erica so much, you can't even, like, fathom someone else would have a different opinion on it. Like, how does what I said make no sense? Beverly Hills fans are annoying dumbasses, and Erica Jayne is responding to them accordingly on Twitter. Like, it's not that deep, it's not that complicated. I love her social media, okay? I actually love it to the point that I've been pretty neutral, honestly, on Erica, because my whole thing was like, whatever, when she's charged, I'll react to then. Until then, I don't understand what's going on. It's too complicated. It's too confusing. It's not why I watch Housewives. So I've kind of like been on the fence. But when I see her like going off on people on Twitter and Instagram, like I love it. It makes me want to be Team Erica, because I'm like, yes, these people are fucking annoying as hell and they deserve to get dragged. And do you guys understand that she's not, like, attacking the victims on Twitter? Like, she's not tweeting the victims. She's attacking Karen-ass Housewives fans that think they know more than the police and the prosecutors and know more about her life than she does, and they spam her all day with conspiracy theories and hashtag Mean Girls, hashtag the Fox Force 5, have a conspiracy to take down Sutton, to take down Garcelle. She's their victim. You stole from orphans and widows. Like, she gets that all day when, again, Tom's the one that's Tom is the one that actually did it. They're fucking losers. Fuck them. As if you wouldn't be annoyed, as if you wouldn't want to respond like that. And this person that wrote this dumb ass fucking review, it's so funny because the day that they that popped up for me saying that I'm being fake, pretending to like her Twitter, hours earlier, I was literally checking her Twitter because she had like, she eased back on it because Andy Cohen told her like that she has to stop tweeting. I was checking her Twitter like, God, when is she coming back? Like, I miss those tweets. Like, that's how much I like it, that I think about it and I go to check the account specifically just to see if she's attacking people. I love it. So it's so fucking frustrating to have someone saying that I was faking it. There's no conspiracy. So go and change your fucking review, because if the only issue you had with me was that I'm a fake defender of Erica's Twitter, well, now you know it's legit. So rewrite that shit. Make it 5 stars. You guys don't get how annoying you are, because it's like I've experienced the tiniest 0.0001% of what these women go through, just having like, you know, weird, annoying tweets about like Lisa Rinna at me for the last few days, which is not a big deal, but it is annoying. So imagine having that on like the scale that these women do, where it's just like probably 1,000 tweets and messages a day of this shit. Like, go follow Crystal on Instagram. She reposts when she gets racist messages on Instagram from people. Like, she reposts them. And then Lisa Rinna gets people messaging her like, Erica invested in your Rinna beauty, and then that's why you're siding with each other, and you plotted to get Lisa Vanderpump off the show because you were jealous because she's the queen. Like, the shit that these people come up with. And all of them want to respond like Erica is. Erica's just the only one doing it. And like, Erica's not behaving any differently to how she always has. Like, go listen to how many fucks by her. Like, that's Erica. You know, she snapped at Teddy over pretend amnesia. That's her personality. That's how she's always been. So I liked Erica when she came on the show. I liked her pre the show. The way she's behaving, nothing for me is an issue. Even with Sutton, like, she is kind of bullying Sutton for sure. But now the deeper I get into it, and I'm like, I really don't. Yeah, I think Erica's getting off the hook. I don't think Erica, so far from what I can understand, especially after talking to Zach and talking to some other people, has really done anything. So to have people questioning you in the way that, by the way, I like Sutton. Like, I think Sutton has every right to question her. So it's not against Sutton, but if I had someone questioning me, even though it's justified, if I was in the position that Erica is in with all the stress and everything going on, like, I would probably react like that too. So yeah, you guys are making me team. I think I will be team Erica, actually, because I'm already team Lisa Rinna. I'll be team Erica now, because fuck you guys. Anyway, let me bring out Zach. I just got to give a shout out to my Patreon subscribers, my new ones. I think I've forgotten to do it the last couple weeks. So shout out to Candace, Emma, Nicholas, Amber, Jennifer, Michelle, and Rebecca. Also extra big shout out to Patty for upping her pledge. We love Patty for that. I love all you guys for supporting me on there. I'm going to try and drop a new Patreon episode sometime this week when I get a chance. I'm actually really busy at the moment with preparing to move and stuff, but I'm going to get one out, because I have some good tea that I know you guys are going to love. And then I'm going to talk about like Salt Lake City and some of the shows that I missed on this episode, because this episode's very Erica Jane, very Nicki Minaj heavy. Also, it's again, it's much longer than an hour. I know I made a big deal about I'm going to cut my episodes to an hour, but then I have these great people on like Zach and Cho last week, and we just talk and talk and talk, and it doesn't end. Also, on Patreon, they just added this new feature. It's called Lens. It's like Instagram stories. So if you already have Patreon and you're subscribed to me there, make sure you download the app so then you can see those. I mean, if you want to, maybe you don't want to see my little IG stories, but I posted a couple ones on there here and there. So it's just a fun kind of extra way that I can interact with you guys and share things with you. So you can sign up to support the show at patreon.com/unpopularjp, or you can just download the app and then search Unpopular through that and subscribe. That way you can also follow me on social media at unpopularjp on Twitter and Instagram. Now, thanks for listening. Here is Zach Peter, and have a great week, guys. Hey guys, I have one of my favorite people on today, and honestly one of the best Bravo podcasters in the game, I think. He's very industrious because he gets into all the nitty-gritty legal stuff that I just do not understand. So please welcome Zach Peter from the No Filter podcast.
Hi, Jockey Pocky. I'm doing well. I'm in Los Angeles right now, living my best life.
Oh my God, you just had a date. How was it?
Okay, yeah, I told you that in confidence. It was much better than I expected. We had a lot of my No Filter Rosé, and I was not expecting it to end or to be as well as it was. So it got me in the right, like, mental, physical, emotional space to come and tape your podcast.
Well, we're not even allowed to date here or see anyone with our lockdowns that have been going on for an eternity. So
I break the rules all the time.
I've started to. It's so funny. Last year, I was such a Karen. When they first started putting all the rules and everything, I was like doing everything by the book. And then when it came to this year, I'm like, fuck, actually, shouldn't even. They'll fucking listen to this, the Australian police, and come and arrest me for even saying that.
I love it.
Let's just get into it, because I want to get into the Erica Jane of it all first, because I've had, and you're the Erica Jane expert, honestly, and I've had Erica haters harassing me for days and like on Twitter, and I'm not getting anywhere with them because they spam me with all these things that I sort of don't understand. And I'm just like, well, why hasn't she been charged? Like, does this prove she's guilty? And then they don't really have anything to say back. So the first thing I want to get on with these psychos is they always send me something about the $25 million that was transferred into her account. They say that this is proof that she's guilty. They throw this at me every time. So Can you, like, explain this in just an easy term to understand? Did Tom give her $25 million from burn victims and she spent it on glam?
I'm so glad you asked me this question, because this is one of the most frustrating arguments I see online. It's like, it was her LLC. How does she not know the money was going into her bank account? Hold up, wait a minute, let's back this shit up. So the $25 million is an accumulation over the course of 12 years. So it wasn't like just last year, Tom's like, okay, in the next 6 months, I'm gonna get amnesia and here's a $25 million spot into your bank account. The money never went into her bank account. This was an accumulation of expenses, primarily an Amex bill. So Erica had a personal Amex card that was in her name, Erica Girardi. And so her whole entire life was run on this personal Amex card. The bill she never saw, it went off to Tom Girardi. Tom Girardi then was paying for that Amex bill with Girardi Keys money. And now we've learned that the bills were being paid off of money that should have gone to clients, but that didn't actually go to clients, allegedly. So he was keeping funds that should have gone from settlements to his clients. He was keeping them and then paying for personal expenses. So it wasn't just her personal Amex bill. It was his personal Amex bill. It was Amex. It was expenses for these mistresses that he had. Trisha A. Bigelow got a brand new booty on Girardi Keys money. Nobody's going after Trisha A. Bigelow, though. So, you know, the $25 million was an accumulation in expenses. So glam budget. So let's say, for example, Erica got her hair and makeup did for an event. She would pass the bill off onto Tom. Tom would pay for it. And now we learned that it was Girardi Keys money that was money that should have gone to clients.
Okay. Well, thank you. Because the way that the people come at me on Twitter about this is that they frame it like Tom just randomly transferred her like $25 million into her like personal account. And then she went off and spent it on her like Pretty Mess music video and knew that where it came from. So that makes a lot of sense. And also another podcast I listened to, I think this might have been on Juicy Scoop or something, someone that worked with her said that yes, everything she paid for was always on the credit card. She would just pull out the credit card, it goes on credit, like she wasn't really dealing personally with her own bank.
Right. It was all a personal Amex card. And like, if you know the system here, like so many blonde bimbo housewives, so many trophy wives, like they have an Amex bill. They run up the bill. They have no idea where it's being paid for from, you know. And in this case, like, you know, you look at Tom's reputation. He had a great reputation here in Los Angeles. He was featured on covers of magazines. He was getting awards year after year. He was being praised by the California governor on Watch What Happens Live. That, like, you wouldn't really expect that he would be, you know, shady. And not only that, but like, because then people bring up, oh, well, he was getting sued. There were all these lawsuits that come up. Any wealthy person has a number of lawsuits that come at them every single year just for being wealthy. Everybody from your gardener to your neighbor to somebody you knew in high school is like, oh, you owe me $20. I'm going to sue you for that because you have money and I can sue you. So yes, there were a number of lawsuits that were coming up. I'm pretty sure Tom was downplaying them and telling Erica, it's not anything you should be worried about. I got it. You know, I'm a big bad lawyer here in Los Angeles. And she was like, all right, well, here's my Amex bill. Keep paying it. Here's my glam bill. Keep paying it. He was paying for all of her expenses.
Yeah. And why is she going to want to worry about these random ass lawsuits? Like you said, me in Australia, like we're not really litigious here, but then I look at America and it's crazy, especially California, because I see people suing each other left and right. But we know that they were kind of living separate lives. Like they would come together when they had sort of work things where she had to play the lawyer's wife and go to like a charity function or a business meeting.
Yeah, the
arm candy. So she played a role with that. But besides that, they lived their separate lives. He was doing all of his fucking wheeling and dealing, God knows what, and she's off being Erica Jane, you know, performing for the gays in the clubs and filming the housewives. So,
well, and the thing though is, like, if we actually put ourselves in that position, if you have a very big, badass, wealthy attorney husband, how many of you would honestly, if you were in that position, would be like, show me the receipts. I want to know where every single penny has come from. Like, let's be realistic for a minute. How many people would honestly be like, I want to know, like, if you're going to pay for my expenses, I want to know where that money is coming from specifically. Like, nobody would be asking those. You would trust your husband and you'd be like, he's wealthy, he's powerful. Why do I have to question that?
There's also another element that I feel like people gloss over because they're used to seeing the aggressive Erica Jane persona, which, I mean, she told us there's two Erica, there's Erica Girardi, there's Erica Jane, right. I'm two people. And we kind of thought she was just saying she really was two people. And to be in a marriage like that, there is such a huge power dynamic that I think most people can't wrap their heads around. And I think she would have been sort of intimidated by him in many ways. And it probably is like, don't ask questions. Like, you sort of know your place in a marriage like that, especially as long as the bills are being paid and you're allowed to go off and do your pop star thing and be on the Housewives and sort of live your best life. You're not really going to be in there aggressively questioning him over things. And we even saw they roll that tape back of when she speaks up at the dinner and then he kind of like snaps at her and she sits back and zips up, you know what I mean? So she's...
Yeah, where he's like, Erica, I'm talking. And then she like...
Yeah. Retreats. So she knew her place in that marriage, and there really was. There was the that trophy wife that didn't speak up and was just the arm candy. And then there was the Erica Jane, and they were two people. And she told us they were two people. And I think we didn't take it seriously, and now we know that there really was.
And people forget that, like, she was a single mother, that, like, there was more at stake than just a shoe budget or a glam budget. Like, she had a child that she was trying to provide for. And could it have been out of survival? Could it have been out of love? Like, there are many factors that could have gone into her marriage and why she chose to marry this man. But, like, at the end of the day, it was more than just her paycheck or her expenses. At the end of the day, she had a child that she was providing for, and now she had a man that came into her life and was like, I will not only give you shelter, but like, I'll provide for you and your son.
And there's also the Erica haters, right? So the other thing is, they follow this Ronald Richards guy. He, I guess you're down with Ronald Richards, you know all the tea. And it's so funny because you and I, we did the Hot Takes and Deep Dives podcast together, and then we got into a Ronald Richards thing, but I didn't have that much to say on it because I don't follow all the nitty-gritty of the legal stuff. Like, it doesn't interest me that much, but I just knew him as this crazy guy on Twitter. And then when I found out actually live on air that he was representing the victims, I'm like, wait, that guy is representing the victims in a lawsuit against Erica? Because I just thought he was some ambulance chasing, like, clout chaser. And then to think,
I mean, he's not that.
Well, I compared him to Bill Murray in Wild Things, but now I actually think that was like too high of a compliment, because I see his social media activity and, okay, one, this guy makes Erica look so good, because it doesn't do any favors, because he's so outrageous and so in it for like fame. And he kind of, to me over here from Australia, so I don't know if he could sue me in Australia, but I guess being an Australian, I look at him and he's like a caricature of like the thirsty American lawyer that you would see in like fucking like Jim Carrey, Liar Liar or something. I like, it's crazy to me. So this guy is representing the victims. Is that's accurate?
So he has been hired by the Girardi Keys bankruptcy trustee. So there's Elisa Miller. She's the one that is in charge of the trustee. So there are two different parts of the bankruptcy. There's the Tom Girardi personal estate, and then there's Girardi Keys. Girardi Keys is the business. The personal estate is his personal, you know, finances and assets. So the personal estate is suing Erica because they want her to give over community property that could be liquidated to pay off some of his debts. And then you have the Girardi Keys, which is the business, where you have Elisa Miller, who is the one that's running the investigation into Tom's finances. She then hired Ronald Richards as special counsel to investigate Erica Girardi personally. So his job is solely to focus in on Erica and see what she has, what money is owed to Girardi Keys, et cetera, et cetera. My biggest thing is, yes, that's his job, and that's something that we should be investigating. When you actually go through Girardi Keys' financials, you'll realize that there were a lot of people that Tom loaned, quote unquote, loaned money to, which really just seems like a tax evasion sort of, you know, way to get out of paying taxes. He just would write these things off as loans in the books. Erica Jane's expenses were one of the things that he would write off in his taxes as, you know, loans that he would be giving out to EJ Global. So Ronald Richard's job is to solely focus on the Erica Girardi of it all and see what she could potentially pay back into the estate to see what they could pay off the debts with.
Is there any, I mean, look, obviously you and I aren't lawyers, but is there any legal, I don't know, benefit for him acting the way he does on social media? Because I'm like, this isn't professional.
Yeah, so he has, so here's the thing. He has a lot to gain from the case specifically. So one, he has a 40 to 45% commission to gain off of any money that he brings in. So as of right now, the number that's being thrown around is $25 million. Will she have to pay that full $25 million? Again, that's over the course of 12 years. Obviously, there are statute of limitations issues that come up. There are, you know, there needs to be a full forensic accounting that needs to go into the Girardi books to see what money was Girardi Kiese's actual commission from these settlements, what money was belonged to the victims. I interviewed a bankruptcy attorney and he's like, well, in this case, like a lot of these victims should just get their own lawyer and try to sue personally outside of the bankruptcy. Because even the way it's looking, when they bring this money into the bankruptcy, you know, case, a lot of the bank lenders are going to be the ones that are going to be getting money back before any of the actual victims are. So is somebody like Ronald Richards fighting for the victims if they're working on behalf of the bankruptcy and the bankruptcy is paying back the banks and the lenders? You know, that's a big question. However, he does have a 40 to 45% commission. And if the number is 25 million, that's what, like 10-ish million that he has to potentially benefit on top of expenses that he then is racking up on all of these, you know, in these avenues that he's going down to investigate the case. So he has expenses paid and he has a commission. Now, I know a lot of people come for me because they're like, oh, well, you know, he's doing his job. He deserves his paycheck. And I'm like, yes, absolutely. But let's not think that he's a saint in all of this when he has a lot to gain. Potential.
Well, that's like the people that say that you shouldn't tax Jeff Bezos because he worked hard. You know what I mean? It's like, no, we should tax the fuck out. Right, Come on, girl. And you mentioned about the forensics. So has a forensic investigation not been done, at least publicly? So we don't even know the money that Erica was spending on different things and glams and music video and her lifestyle. We don't even know like what percentage of that is from victims and what is from God knows what else.
Well, because at the end of the day, like, yes, there was money that's owed to victims, but there is still at least a 40% commission of those settlements that was entitled to Girardi Kiese. You know what I mean? Like the lawyers are entitled to a cut of whatever that settlement is. So there needs to be a forensic accounting that goes into being like, okay, well, what cut was entitled to Girardi Kiese and what cut was entitled to the victims? And they have to go through each of the contracts and each of the settlement agreements and do that. None of that has actually happened yet. And so Ronald Richards is out there going on Twitter being like, Erica Jane, you have, you know, if you give up all $25 million of what you're owed, then I'll donate 10% for every $100,000 you give back. And it's like, well, but you have to actually prove that she owes $25 million. You know, you can say she racked up $25 million in expenses, but what does she actually owe? Again, there's the statute of limitations issues. There's the forensic accounting that still has yet to be done. Like, this is an ongoing investigation. So to throw out a settlement offer on Twitter like that and then be like, you know, you have 5 days left to answer my, you know, response, and I'm going to talk to Us Weekly and Radar Online, and I'm going to go off and talk to all of the press about this. It's like, well, then you really have to analyze, like, well, what is this really about? You know, in the words of Lisa Vanderpump, since a lot of the people that hate Erica Jane are big LVP stans,
yes,
you know,
are.
Lisa was always saying, if there's a press article out there, who does it have to benefit? And you really have to look at a lot of these exclusives that are being given to the press.
And I feel like with the money that Tom was getting, it's not like every single case he did was a scam. Like, yes, he's a scumbag and what he did was disgusting. He ripped off these poor people. But there's probably some legit cases in there as well that he's handled above board. So there could be settlements from that. I mean, Erica herself as well, I would say, was probably, look, she wasn't raking in tens of millions of dollars, but I would say since joining the Housewives, she would have made several million dollars because the salary goes up each year. So the last couple of years, I would say she would be on at least $500,000 per season, at least. She got a book deal. She had a shoe dazzle deal. She had, and obviously she has a lot of expenses too, but she has a lot of social media posts, which she would have got a lot of money from that. You know, I know people that are influencers just from like Married at First Sight and stuff, and they get a lot of money for like post, so someone on her level is getting a lot of... So she's still bringing in some income as well. So I think to just flat out act like she has $25 million of Burns victims' money that she spent on hair and a music video is, like, obviously not correct. Also, with this Ronald Richards guy... Is he out here spreading, like, conspiracies? Because I see the fans send me weird conspiracies, the ones that are trying to attack me, and they're like, there was one, what was it, Erica invested in Rinna Beauty, or Erica invested, like, these stupid conspiracies. And I'm so used to the conspiracies from the Beverly Hills fans, because, again, a lot of the haters are they're LVP stands, and they're the kings and queens of conspiracies. They always have weird conspiracies about, they were jealous of LVP, and they did this, and they tried to take her down. So I'm not surprised that they're very conspiratorial, but Ronald Richard seems to fuel these. Am I correct in that?
He definitely likes to perpetuate a lot of speculation. And so he and I had a big Twitter exchange recently in regards to a specific incident that involved Lisa Rinna's daughters, Amelia and Delilah. They had a clothing collaboration back in, I think, 2019 or maybe 2018. I don't remember the exact year. Again, you're catching me after a date and some No Filter Rosé. But, like, they had a short, limited-run collaboration clothing line where they designed some clothes for a brand called LA Collective, and that launched a few years ago, and their collaboration was called DNA. So in Erica's expenses that EJ Global had spent, there was a company listed as DNA Inc. So there was a exclusive that was given to Radar Online by Ronald Richards that said, oh, Erica Jane paid out, you know, $150,000 to DNA Inc. And by the way, Lisa Rinna's daughters happened to have a collaboration called DNA a few years ago. I actually think it was, like, back in 2017 or 2018. But anyway, it was a limited edition sort of situation. And he's like, she spent this money, $150,000 on DNA. Could that have been the Rinna collection from, you know, a couple of years ago? And I Googled DNA Inc. and I very quickly was able to find out that DNA Inc. was a Los Angeles or Santa Monica based video production company that produces music videos for artists. Who produces a lot of music videos? Erica Jane. So to me, I was like, well, that's, like, you can deduce that in 5 minutes and be like, oh, that's likely a production expense rather than, well, like, why would she spend $150,000 in teenage clothing for Lisa Rinna's daughters? Like, it didn't make sense. So I called him out for that. Exactly, for a limited edition collection. And so Radar Online ended up then retracting the story, republishing, you know, with a statement from Erica's attorneys, from Delilah and Amelia's attorneys, and being like, you know, this was a false story and here's the clarification on it. And so I called him out for that and I was like, I think your ego is getting in the way of doing your job, because now you're on this wild goose chase of trying to prove that there's a connection between Erica's expenses and Lisa Rinna when... And to be fair, he didn't start the conspiracy theory that there was a connection between Rinna Beauty and EJ Global, but he definitely perpetuated it. You know, he kept it going. He gave life to it. He was kind of like, well, I've heard this, so maybe there's something to it. But it's like, my thing is, like, don't come to us unless you actually have concrete evidence or you have facts. Like, do your investigation, do your digging. If she owes money, then go after her and get the money that she owes, and then come to the public and then do your press tour and be like, you know, this is the situation, and now I can cash in on this, you know, OJ Simpson case, and I'm Robert Kardashian, and I'm going to do all the press that I can to get my name out there, but don't do it preliminary.
Yeah, and the fans love this stupid bullshit. Like I said, I get DMs and stuff of Erica is invested in Rinna Beauty, and then Lisa Rinna had to, like, address it on Watch What Happens Live, and she's like, no, that is not true. It's like, there's all this misinformation, I feel like, swirling around. Yeah. I'm like, I just want to look at the facts. And every time someone attacks me over Erica, I'm like, but she hasn't been charged. Andy said that. He went out of his way. He goes, by the way, she hasn't been charged with anything. So really, we just have a lot of lawsuits and hearsay is sort of how I've taken it. And I've always taken the stance of, if some evidence comes out that she's guilty or she's done something, like, I'll condemn her on the spot. Like, I think Tom is disgusting. Like, same. When I watched the...
Tom is disgusting. You heard the voicemails from
they
Tom Girardi.
Chilling. They were horrifying.
You've seen all the... Exactly. You've seen all the receipts with Tom. There has been not an ounce of evidence with Erica. You know, I know people be like, oh, well, she was named as a secretary on his company. No, she was named as a secretary on one of his companies that was a financial company. He had many companies. And as you dig, you realize that a lot of these companies seemed like shell companies. And so he would list people on the boards of directors or as officers of the company. And it wasn't even a real company. So what was she actually a secretary of? And they're like, oh, well, she signed documents on behalf of the company. It's like, okay, well, let's get into the documents. There were two documents with her, with an Erica Girardi signature on them, vastly different signatures on each of them, neither of the documents that were actually notarized. And what did the documents actually say? The documents said that, oh, I understand that my husband is taking out a loan. That doesn't mean that she knew exactly what he was doing. So if you actually dig into these things and don't just believe the headlines or the hype around it, it's like, okay, well, what does it actually mean, you know?
It feels very misogynistic to put all of the blame onto one woman while the guy, the man that we know that actually did this, we've heard the voicemails of the scamming, we all watched Housewife and The Hustler, and it seems like no one is even holding him accountable at all. They don't even care. It's like all about Erica, which is really gross. And there's this weird logic that I see. It's like, okay, so if we're holding Erica accountable, right, for spending Tom's money that may have come from victims, by that logic, shouldn't we hold, like, everyone accountable that, you know, took money from him, which
that benefited,
which
from
is a lot of people. And I actually read this LA Times article about how he gave like over $7 million to all these top California Democrats and was getting favors in return. This includes Gavin Newsom. So,
oh yeah, Gavin Newsom profited off of Tom Girardi heavily, but yet everyone went out there and voted in his recall election. You know what I mean?
What I was like, I hope you Erica haters voted to like get rid of Newsom, which I don't think he did because he's still around. So
no, they didn't. Yeah, he's still here. So, but it's like, but not only that, he was making donations to the California State Bar on top. Like when you have the governor of California going on Watch What Happens Live and saying that Erica Jane is his favorite housewife because her husband contributes to your campaign, like, and now we see, like, Gavin Newsom hasn't been dragged into any of this, and yet Tom Girardi has donated to him like a lot of money to his campaigns in the past. You have the mistresses that he was paying for, Trisha A. Bigelow. Why aren't we digging into her and the plastic surgery that she allegedly received on his dime? You know, there are a lot of people that benefited from Tom Girardi's money, but yet we're going to go after
solely
Erica. And that's not to say that, yeah, and that's not to say that Erica shouldn't be held accountable. Like, she should actually be held accountable. But when you have something to hold her accountable for that's exclusive to the situation beyond everybody else that benefited from Tom Girardi's money, like, let's talk about all the politicians that he was taking out and spending all of this money on these extravagant dinners on, that he was flying around the country to schmooze to get whatever the hell he was getting from that. Like,
that's what,
there was obviously reason and incentive behind
that. That's what gets me. Like, here's this quote that I pulled from the LA Times article. It said, Girardi lobbied the former state attorney general to not pursue charges against Hewlett-Packard chair Patricia Dunn, who was under investigation for allegedly directing a boardroom spying program, and instead to go after a young, low-level participant. So I'm like, okay, this is what's outraging me, knowing that he's giving these money to these politicians and getting these rich fucking fat cats like off the hook with things, and then trying to put, like, you know what I mean? Like, they're influencing there, which is really making a difference to a lot of people's lives and is full-blown government corruption. To me, that's worse than Erica Jane spending money on a music video and on a credit card and not knowing where the money came from and not asking.
Yeah, like, you look at what she was spending it on, glam and music videos and like fictitious stuff. You literally have politicians that could have put a stop to his behavior and didn't stop him and continue to allow this behavior to go on for 3 decades. And yet we're just going to totally give them a pass.
And that, I know there's been some articles about it, but it's like that part of it is not getting the attention that it should be getting. Like, that should actually be the focus. Like, yes, there are articles about it, but everyone's talking about Erica Jane. We should be talking about Tom Girardi, Gavin Newsom, all of the politicians that he's worked with. That should be the main
How huge of a story would that be?
That would be more.
But it's not a huge story. Yeah, but it's not, because there was a recall election and we had to protect Gavin Newsom.
I mean, There, now we said it. And
now, yeah, but now we said it.
That's, and you know what? I want to see not the housewife and the hustler,
can you,
the politician and the hustler.
Can you guess how I voted? Can you guess how I voted on that recall election?
My listeners will love that.
Because yeah. I voted.
I want the politician and the hustler, because that's the story that I'm interested in more. Like, that's what I want to know about. And now I want to get to some of Erica's crazy stories that she is talking about on the show, because that is what's interesting to me is, like, I'll watch the show, right? And I'll be like, okay, it seems like a crazy story. I don't know if it's true or if it's a lie. But I think, oh, it's probably not true. But then I see you, and I also see Kiki at Talk of Shame, and you both have done some cross-checking on some of the stories, and a lot of details that you wouldn't think would check out kind of check out, or they at least seem plausible, would be, like, it could have happened. It'd be like, well, it actually was raining on that night, and so is there, could she be telling the truth with these stories? Is she being misled by someone else? Yeah. Is she lying? So, what is the take on this?
No. So I think, here's the thing. Like, when you pick apart anybody's story, you're like, to me, the logic is like, oh, she said that it happened at noon and we dug into it and it happened at 12:15 and that's 15 minutes after noon. So that's afternoon and not actually noon. She's lying. And that's kind of the logic that a lot of people are going into this with. They're watching the show and they're looking for things to pick apart. You know, they're looking for reasons to validate their hatred for her and looking for reasons to prove that she's lying. Is she actually lying? Like, you know, that's where you really have to consider, well, what do you consider lying? Is she withholding pieces of the truth? And do you consider that lying? I know some people do. And so in that case, okay, fine, you can say that she's lying. But, you know, I think a lot of the stories that she's telling are very hyperbolic. I think that she definitely plays up a lot. But in a regular, like, I listened to my grandpa, and my grandpa, when he called me last year, and he's like, oh my God, your aunt got into a car accident and her car flipped over 3 times. And I'm like, well, she had, you know, she has a big SUV. Did it really flip over 3 times? But, you know, in his telling of the story, it sounds so much more exciting because, you know, and maybe the car tilted over back and forth 3 times. Did it actually flip over? Maybe not. But in his telling of the story, that's how he's, you know, delivering it to me. And I think naturally, you know, we deliver stories and we blow them a little, we hype them up a lot more than the reality actually is. But you have former employees, you have like Kimberly Archie. So let's talk about Tom in the Ding Dong Ditch. Erica talked about Tom getting in a car accident and falling off of a cliff. Like, that was very hyperbolic. She said that he drove off a cliff. He didn't drive off a cliff. When you actually dig into it, he crashed into a tree, got out of the car and then fell down the hill into a ditch. So was that him driving off a cliff? No, he, you know, got into a car accident and fell down. Was he actually unconscious for 12 hours? We don't actually know. But, you know, it definitely seems like she hyped up a lot of those details. But we can confirm that he did get into a car accident. He did have a head injury. He did have to go into the hospital. It was more than just a sprained ankle. And then you have, you know, Girardi Key's employees that were like, yeah, we know that this happened because we, you know, she went on television to talk about it, to downplay it, because we didn't want his license to be affected. We didn't want his mental, you know, state to be put into question, because he was still a really big attorney and his reputation is, and his ego were on the line, and we wanted to protect that, you know, in protecting him. So then it makes sense why she would go on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and downplay the accident, because if the accident were to break in the press, she could be like, oh yeah, he did get into an accident, he only broke his ankle. So that does kind of
taken some things, by the way. Just when I see it happening, I'm like, well, there's probably a logical explanation, like you're explaining now. That's kind of what has been in my mind the whole time.
And then it comes to, you know, the burglary. So you also have to remember that editing doesn't give you the full scope of what's actually happening in the moment. And so when I first saw her explain the whole Tom and the Ding Dong Ditch story, I was like, okay. And then you see the confessionals and you see that Sutton is the one in the confessionals and she's the only one questioning and being like, I'm confused about this. And this is what they're airing. So in my head, I'm like, okay, well, we watched the trailer. We watched the mid-season trailer. So this feels like a little bit of their of editing and production's foreshadowing of beef that's to come between Sutton and Erica, because we're only seeing confessionals of Sutton that's confused about this actual story. And obviously they know how this all plays out. So, you know, they have to kind of build that story arc. So when it comes to the burglary and the son flipping his car over, you know, five times, I looked into that as well. Obviously, the burglary did happen. There was really bad weather in Pasadena that week. I was staying in Pasadena that week. I happened to be staying with my grandfather out there, and I remember the weather was really bad. It was really cold. It was hailing. And so, you know, I even showed receipts where the LA Times was like, this is very rare that we have hail in Pasadena, but there's hail in Pasadena. And so I shared that article, and I was like, so the weather was really bad in Pasadena that week. So if the weather was hailing in Pasadena, then it goes to show you that areas surrounding Pasadena that are closer to the mountains are likely going to have much more extreme weather, especially if snow is typical in those areas, as she said with her son that was up north. Did his car actually flip over five times? We have no proof of that. We don't know if that was the case. You have the officer that showed up the night of the burglary who's like, yes, I can corroborate that there was an accident that night. I can confirm that I remember hearing about that accident. Then you hear about Tom confronting the burglar. What does that actually mean? Did he confront the burglar? Did he have a bat and did he hit the burglar? Did he just see the burglar from afar and the burglar ran out? Like, we don't know the full scope of what that meant. And then she's like, he went into surgery. So when I heard that story initially, I interpreted that as he saw the burglar that night, the cops came over, he had a scheduled surgery for his glaucoma because he's had glaucoma for a while. And so he had to go into surgery the next day. Is it a little, you know, strange that after your house is burglarized, you still go into surgery? Yes, but does that mean that your surgery was the result of a burglary? Not necessarily. I didn't interpret it that way, but I could understand how people watching it would be like, oh, she said that a burglar came in and then he had to have eye surgery. You know, the two don't necessarily need to connect.
A lot of gray area, and I guess this goes both ways. It's like, whatever whatever you want to believe, you can almost believe just from watching it, because you can interpret the facts in any way that you want. And I've taken a back seat to this, honestly. And I've just said because I'm like, I can't understand all of this. There's so much to it. So complex. There's nothing provable. So my view the whole time has always been, if the charge comes out against Erica, then we'll talk. But until then, I don't fucking know. And neither do you. And again, with the people on social media, the pearl clutching for the victims, please just admit that you don't care about the victims. You care about using the victims to hate on Erica Jayne, because that's what it is. And you know what? It's fine, because I hate LVP, and whenever something happens to her restaurant, they're like, oh, she didn't pay the staff, or there's a health inspection issue. I'm like, it probably wasn't LVP's fault. It was probably something unrelatable, but I have fun retweeting that and dunking on LVP with it. So we all do it, but I'm just like, enough with the pretending that you're so upset about the victim. You hate Erica Jayne, and this is justifying your hatred of her. And you're probably spending too much time in the Bravo Facebook groups and overanalyzing things, and you're going a little crazy. And then you're sending people messages about Rinna Beauty being involved. Now, I want to get into a little bit of the Lisa Rinna and the Crystal in this current season, because it's like, okay, Lisa Rinna does always get hate, so I guess that's separate. But now Crystal's sort of like people are hating on Crystal because they're perceiving her as like Team Erica. So she's getting all this hate now, which just shows how extreme it's getting for Erica, because Crystal's barely been on the show in like five episodes. She has a couple lines.
I don't understand how that's not being misconstrued as racism, though. Like, Crystal is an Asian American woman and you're hating on her. But yet, if we have a critique of Ebony, or if we have a critique of anybody else, Garcelle, immediately you're branded as a racist, but yet you can hate on Crystal all day long, and that's not, like, there's a bit of a double standard.
I get
there.
It constantly, because I've been very critical of Garcelle, and pretty much the only one of the Beverly Hills coming out with the Garcelle stuff, but I love Crystal, but then they'll say I'm racist. But I'm like, but I like Crystal, and you hate Crystal, so, I mean, are you racist too? What's not clicking? By the way, this is a side note about Garcelle. I watched her on The Real for a few things. I saw she did a thing about the Haitian immigrants crossing the border, and then she did this thing, what we're going to get into, with Nicki Minaj's husband, everything, and she was great on The Real, because that was the first time I really watched her on there. I thought she was great. I agreed with what she said about the Haitian refugees. Like, I thought it was fabulous. I just don't agree with her on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. So This last episode, let's get into this. So they had this scene where the women finally kind of confronted Garcelle because they feel like she's been jabbing, which she has been. I go over this all the time. She came for Kyle last year. She's done it to Lisa Rinna. She's done it to Dorit. So they bring it up again and they kind of confront her, and then she doesn't answer the question. And then she goes into, well, I'm an outsider in this group. It's so hard being the only black woman on the cast. You know, it's so hard for me. And all the women start comforting her. Now, my thing is that, yes, that's valid. It's the same way that LVP losing her brother is valid that you're upset. But then that doesn't change what we're accusing you of. Like with Lisa Vanderpump, what happened to your brother doesn't get you a get out of jail free card with, did you leak stories to Radar Online or manipulate with, you know, Teddy and Dorit? And it's the same thing with Garcelle. It's like, well, you've been jabbing and you've been shady because you may feel like an outsider in a group of white women. That doesn't justify it. And then it's like, she didn't have to answer the question. And then at the end, all the women come around her. They start hugging her. They start saying, we're so glad you opened up. And people interpreted this as the mean girls bullied Garcelle until she broke down crying, and then they took pleasure in comforting her, and it was so sick. And the way I interpreted it, which I'm telling you is the correct interpretation, they thought, oh, shit, this is going to look bad because now Garcelle's sitting here crying, saying I'm the only black woman and I'm an outsider in the group. So then they kind of had to overdo, like, we love you, Garcelle, because they don't want to look like racist because they've seen what happens on the other shows. Did you read it the same way as me or differently?
I didn't read it that way. I really just appreciated, I try to watch the show and take it all at face value, and I really appreciated her vulnerability. I appreciated her sharing her experience, but I think at the same time, like, you're right. Like, she has been very shady to the women. She has, like, I get it. Like, you feel like an outsider in the group, but like, you're also not doing yourself any favors in trying to get closer to any of the women. Like, you literally came into the season, reprimanded Lisa Rinna, telling her you can't trust her. You came at Kyle Richards because you didn't pay your donation to Children's Hospital and she called you out for it. Like, you came at these women. You came at Dorit. Like, yeah. Kyle Rinna and Dorit, she came for going into the season. And then now she's trying to sit back and be like, well, you guys aren't my friends. And it's like, well, how do you expect there to be a genuine friendship when you started the season off on not a genuine foot? You started the season off throwing darts at them. And to be fair, that's her job. Your job as a housewife is to be shady and to throw darts. So you can't be mad at her about that. But at the same time, you're like, but the argument that you're trying to portray now is not an accurate portrayal of what the circumstances actually are. You know, these women aren't intentionally excluding you without reason.
Exactly.
They just are excluding you based off of the behavior that you yourself presented coming into this season.
And I feel like a lot of them have restrained themselves from getting into feuds with her because they don't want to feud with the black woman.
Be perceived as, they don't want to be perceived as racist.
We know that,
like,
Garcelle's been trying it with Rinna, and Rinna keeps not giving her that storyline because Rinna's smart enough to know. Like, if someone else was trying it with Rinna like this, she wouldn't take it. But with Garcelle, she's just like, we'll both do better, like, and tries to just diffuse it every time. And my thing is, right, I don't mind seeing racial discussions on The Housewife, and I think there've been some really good moments this year with both Crystal and Garcelle. So when Garcelle talked about what it's like as a mother of black sons and the police profiling, I loved that. When Crystal talked about her experiences, loved that. Even when Crystal and Sutton had their issue and Crystal brought up race, well, that was like accurate. Like, that was part of the discussion they were having because Sutton was being ridiculous, and Sutton started going, I am discriminated against as a white woman. And then it was...
But I loved that moment because it was so honest and it was so real. And I think a lot of people would come into that conversation from Sutton's perspective. And we got to watch that play out and we got to learn from that moment. You know what I mean? Like, those are important. And I think that's what Beverly Hills does really well, that New York really missed the mark on.
Let's not even go near New York with that was a disaster. But so I'm like, I don't mind when either Garcelle or Crystal is bringing up race things, but I just didn't like it in that moment with, okay, now we're confronting you about how you've been jabby and shady. Now, suddenly you're an outsider as a black woman in the group. I mean, by the way, this is not her first time in white spaces. She was married to a white CAA agent in Hollywood. So this is definitely not the, and I'm not saying that that's not always going to be awkward, because even like being gay, right? And of course, I'm around straight people all the time, but sometimes it can be weird when you're in a thing, you're the only gay person, and maybe it's all straight males or something.
Or you're in a room, if you're in a room with all straight men, like that can be awkward. You can feel turn on. Off.
But I understand that, so I'm not invalidating Garcelle on that completely. I just didn't like that it had to come in at that moment. And now, again, you've dodged accountability for this. And then she did it with Kyle too, with when Kyle accurately called her out for not paying for the thing. And this is after a whole season of her jabbing at Kyle, by the way, repeatedly in the press, on the show. Then it comes up again. So I'm just feeling like, okay, are we going to have another situation where, because LVP was kind of off limits for a few years on the seasons. People sort of felt like they couldn't go after LVP because her fans would come after them and everything, and LVP would pull a victim act and they would look like bullies. And I'm like, okay, is this where we're going with Garcelle, that now Garcelle's going to be able to continue being jabby and shady and no one's going to be able to clap back? Because as soon as you clap back, then she's an outsider that the Fox Force 5 are trying to bully off the show, so they just can't do anything. That is...
And to be fair, Garcelle had just given a soundbite to the press saying that she'd been ganged up
on. Which was very manipulative, because she had been ganged up on. And she actually...
No, she had
not. She understands the perception of that, because she understands that the fans have this conspiracy about the Fox Force 5, that they choose a target and it's all this nonsense.
And she and her reference was the Rena Beauty launch party, which was 2 weeks later... Which was 2 weeks ago from when she gave that soundbite, from when that party actually happened. She's like, well, it was right after, but it was like, no, it was two weeks after.
So that's another lie. Okay. And good for that.
Right. And on top of that, like, the women didn't come after her. Dorit came
after
her. And the other women
didn't. I said that.
The other women didn't defend her. Yeah. The other women didn't defend her. And that was her rationalization or her justification as to saying, all of the women attacked me or were coming after me because Dorit came after her and Kyle and Rena didn't speak up.
And
Dorit
also came after her in retaliation for her coming after Dorit. She actually came after Dorit first. So if you're going to relay it accurately, you would say, I had a disagreement with one of the women and, you know, I had some drama with one of the women. Instead, she frames it as the women are all coming after me, where it looks like a group have a one-sided come after you. So I just think it's so manipulative. And how are you feeling about Crystal? Suddenly she's sort of out of the show, and she's not really popping up that much at all. And anytime she opens her mouth and says one thing, Twitter goes crazy. She's posted this horrible sort of racist abuse she's been getting online. And I find her kind of like the most normal one on the show almost. And I feel like the way she's reacting is the most normal way to react, as in, I'm new to the group and this is a very overwhelming, complicated situation with Erica, and I'm kind of staying out of it a bit. And I just feel like it's, like, pretty normal, but it's driving people crazy on Twitter. Every time they see her, they lose their minds.
I love Crystal. I really appreciate Crystal. I knew about her joining the show way before it was announced. And once I found out about it, I did some digging into her. And I'm like, I actually think I'm going to like her. And then in watching the show, I find her very refreshing. I thoroughly enjoy her. She is a little shady. She has really good one-liners and zingers. I think for her first season, she's really delivering, you know. Granted, and this is not just exclusive to Crystal, but for all the women, like, a lot of them, their storyline has been drowned out because the Erica storyline is so pressing and such, you know, a forefront in what's going on the show, that, like, a lot of them filmed full time, but a lot of their scenes as to what's going on in their lives were cut. Crystal is part of that as well. And so, yes, she was part of the beef with Sutton earlier in the season. That's why we saw a little more of her. But it's not
It makes sense to me.
It's not unique that she's not a forefront right now. It's not unique to me that the other women aren't a forefront right now, because the forefront is following Erica's legal drama as it's unfolding and affecting everybody.
And I
love Crystal.
I'm a big fan. And I saw this on Twitter. I don't know if it's true, but then I heard from another source that they're actually going to start filming Beverly Hills in a few weeks. Do you know about this?
They're supposed to start, as far as I've heard, they're supposed to start filming in October.
Okay, yeah, so it's not far away. And do you expect the same cast? I think it'll just be the same cast, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they're bringing anybody new in. Normally, I hear about people that are being interviewed or, you know, people that they're looking at. I haven't heard of any new names that are being considered for this new season. So I would imagine, because this season's cast works so well, and I love everybody on this season's cast. I think they all have a very important role that they fill. I love Sutton. I love Garcelle. I love Erica. I love Rinna. I love Crystal. I love Kyle. I love Kathy. Like, everybody's role and their what they brought to the show this season was perfection that I don't think we need to tweak the cast at all.
Yeah, I think it'll be the same people. Even a lot of people think Crystal might not be back because she hasn't been in these episodes as much, but I think she'll definitely be back. I think they'll all be back. And then some people, like, they want Rinna fired. I'm like, Rinna's not going anywhere. Rinna's incredible on that show. Now, do you think, prediction with Rinna's behavior next season, do you think she, because she sort of has, she definitely reined it back a bit this season, which she tends to do. Like, she has a tough season where she's really kind of like carrying the show, and then she'll sit back a little bit because she'll be like, hey, I'm not fucking doing all the work. So she's kicked back a little bit this season, and I think she earned her right to after last year. Do you think next season we're going to get Rinna, like hardcore Rinna, back on fire, or do you think she's going to continue going this way? Because the hate is getting very extreme for anyone that is sort of team Erica, so I can understand how some of the women might be a little scared.
I mean, I'm sure you get it. Like, for me, I'm not team Erica. I'm like more neutral, and I try to stay up.
That's what I am too.
And whatever the facts tell me, yeah, whatever the facts tell me is what I base my opinion and, you know, position on. And, like, it's insane to me, Jacques, the amount of, like, nastiness that I get from people. I can't even imagine what the cast gets, because the shit that I get in my DMs, I'm just like, who the fuck are you, Susan from Ohio? Like, what the fuck do you know? Like, what are you, like, really? So, to me, it's just, it's wild. But I think, you know, at some point, like, to me, I'm like, are fans ruining Housewives? Yes. Like, because if you continue to destroy these women, how do you expect them to want to keep coming and delivering and giving you a good show?
It's so insane. Like, it's especially Beverly Hills is by far the worst of all the fandoms. They're out of control. And this is why, look, by the way, I have been team neutral, honestly, but they're making me team Erica Jayne because they're so awful that I feel like then I have to go to Erica Jayne to give that counter narrative. And I'm always team Rinna every season because I love Rinna. But one of my things with Erica is, and she gets, I'm probably one of the only people that's saying this, I love Erica Jayne's social media presence. I know people hate it. I know people think it's inappropriate. I have dealt on a micro scale with some of these deranged Beverly Hills fans. Like, I've just had the last few days of them harassing me over Lisa Rinna, and before that it was harassing me over Crystal and then harassing me over Erica. And I'm like, imagine being Erica Jayne, having this bombardment constantly. And I'm not offended by what she says, because it's like, she's not attacking the victims. Like, she's attacking random annoying Housewives viewers that think they know more than, like, the fucking FBI or whoever the fuck is investigating the case. So I get it. I love it. I'm glad that she's shutting them down. I don't have a problem with it. I want more of it. In fact, when I am neutral and then when I see Erica go that hard in the paint against people, even going hard against Sutton, and it is kind of like bullying behavior against Sutton too. Like, I do think that she goes over aggressive with Sutton, but then I also think, well, if Erica's actually innocent, she hasn't done anything, and then she's got someone, even though I think Sutton means well and I really like Sutton, but you know, if you got someone poking at you at that time, I, like, get why you're going to lash out like that. So I don't have a problem with how she's behaving.
Does Sutton really mean well, though?
Well, I don't know. My thing is, though, I've seen Sutton doing interviews now, and she's sort of, she's not really that much against Erica. Like, I think
no one is. So here's the thing, though, Jacques. Nobody is against, like, Garcelle and Sutton.
The fans paint them in that role.
Exactly. Garcelle and Sutton have both spoken out in support of Erica since the wrapping of the season. And that's what I try to remind people. I'm like, if all of the women have come to this conclusion, what makes you think that you're any smart? Like, the more I dig into it, Like, I don't think Erica is as guilty as people want to believe that she is. But then you have, again, Susan from Ohio, and she's like, you're wrong, Zach. I know. I'm like, what the fuck do you know? Like, don't you have two kids to go and feed? Like, what the fuck do you actually know? Like, don't blow me up in my DMs because I'm doing legwork to actually investigate this. And not only that, but like, the actual people investigating this case haven't charged her with anything. Like, when you look at all of this stuff, like, stop looking at all of these like cheap, you know, Instagram accounts and YouTubers and podcasters that are trying to get cheap likes and comments. Like, listen, my reviews on iTunes have taken a hit. My comments have I've had to take a hit. There is no benefit or incentive for me to share my opinion because it's clearly the unpopular opinion, but I'm just so naturally not drawn to follow the fray and to have my own point of view. I get dragged for that. There's no incentive for me to share my honest opinion. If anything, it's the opposite. You know, I get, you know, this visceral hatred from people and, you know, this nastiness that, like, it, to me, it's like, it's not based in logic. A lot of these perceptions and viewpoints, it's not. It's like based in, like, I watched the show and, you know, I think I know it all. And it's like, but what do you really know? You know, are you basing this off of any
fact? I got my first bad review the other day about the Erica thing where they said, I think he's faking that he likes Erica's social, likes Erica's social media posts because he just wants to be unpopular. It's baffling to me. I'm like, no, I actually like her social media posts. Like, there's no conspiracy. I like it. It makes me like her more. And just for the record, by the way, I will say I'm an OG Erica Jane fan as a pop artist for like 10 plus years. Like, I love all the songs. I still listen to her music all the time. So
okay, so I'm the opposite. I was not a fan of Erica. I thought she brought an interesting flavor to the show, but I didn't listen to her music. I never bought her book. Like, I was never really interested in her prior to, like, investigating all of this. But, like, at the same time, I don't love her social media, but I understand it, you know? And so I'll bring on therapists and we'll dissect it. And it's like, well, you know, this is like, why is she coming at Sutton so hard? But it's like, if you really believe that you're that innocent and somebody is literally creating this narrative of you on television, aren't you going to do everything you can to fight that narrative if you really believe that you are innocent? And not only that, but then like social media, like her default, you know, defense mechanism is to portray this ice queen role, this ice queen, you know, character that she has had to use to protect herself. It's only natural. Do I love her social media? No. Do I think that it's tactless and tone deaf? Yes. Do I think it's disrespectful to the victims? Absolutely. But I understand where it's coming from. I understand that it is a defense mechanism and she's trying to, you know, survive the circumstances that she's in. That's not to take away the experience of the victims because they are in a really fucked up, shitty position and my heart is broken for them. And you see people like Ronald Richards or, you know, these other attorneys that really look like they're here to cash out on this case more than they are looking to help the victims. And it's like, you know, it's disheartening. And so, yeah, I'm going to call out those people because to me, they aren't actually helping the victims as much as they are helping themselves.
Yeah, well said. Okay, so now it's my time to get legal on you because I want to talk about this Nicki Minaj drama because Nicki's husband's rape victim was on The Real for a very emotional interview. And this story is actually crazy. Like, when I first wanted to talk about this with you, I didn't realize this went as deep and was complicated as it is. Now, I covered Nicki last week with the vaccine thing, and I defended her on that, and I loved seeing her attack Joy Reid and all these people in the mainstream media for sort of, you know, attacking her and framing her as an anti-vaxxer and everything. So I was kind of team Nicki last week. But what I did say in that episode that I did with my friend Cho is that Nicki is a horrible person, and she's been a horrible person for a long time, and she hangs around with a lot of disgusting people. Her brother is a pedophile who was in jail for raping his 11-year-old stepdaughter. And she stood by him, like, not super publicly, but we know from the bits and pieces that she has definitely not disowned her brother. She's privately stood by him, it seems. And her husband, okay, let me get into this thing about her husband, right? So Nicki's husband, Kenneth Petty, he was convicted of first-degree attempted rape back in 1995 when he was 16. So this is the rape of Jennifer Hoff. He pled guilty and he did 4 years. So what happened. So convicted, done his time. This isn't alleged. This happened. He admitted it. This isn't like a rumored victim. Like, she was raped. It's a fact. So what happened was she was walking home from school. He grabbed her at knife point. Then, and they knew each other from like around Queens. So they all sort of like knew each other in like the neighborhood there. He led her into a house. And then I don't think it was full rape, but it was attempted rape. There was a lot of fighting off at knife point. It went on for a long time. And she left. She reported it. He went to jail. He's in there for 4 years. She leaves New York because when she's young, because he sort of like ran the streets there and knew a lot of people. So her family starts getting like threats from like his people and everything. So she leaves New York to kind of start a new life. Everyone moves on with their lives. He gets out of jail. She moves who knows where. And then fast forward like 20 years. And then Nikki, who grew up in the same area, she knew Kenny since she was 14 because they were all running around Queens together. She gets back in contact with him. I think he works in the music industry now. They get married in 2019, sort of on the down low. I don't think any of us have seen her wedding pictures or anything. It wasn't, you know, a People magazine exclusive. They get married quietly, have a baby. Kenny moves from New York to California without registering as a sex offender in California, which he needs to do by law. So if he's crossing state lines, he has to register as a sex offender in that state. And if you register as a sex offender, that is like public record. So your home address is listed. So that means that like Nicki Minaj's, you know, her Bel-Air mansion or wherever she lives is going to be like public record and everything. So I'm guessing that one reason that he didn't register, because it was already public, like the record that he did time for rape. So people knew about that, but I guess he didn't register because he didn't want her privacy affected or something, but he didn't. In November 2019, he gets pulled over on a routine traffic stop. They bust him as you didn't register as a sex offender. And he also, by the way, pleaded guilty to manslaughter at some point. So he's got like a record. So now he's facing 10 years in prison because of this. So he gets arrested. And now this is from here, this is according to a lawsuit filed by Jennifer Hoff, the rape victim. Kenny and Nikki started reaching out to her with bribes to get her to recant the allegations. I'm thinking that maybe their logic is that if she takes it back, one, it helps their PR, their image, so then Nikki's not publicly married to a rapist. And then also it may lessen the potential of him doing time in prison. If he never raped her, then it's like he, you know, the sex offender having to register and all of that. So first they contact a family member because, again, they all sort of know her family and everything from growing up together. Then Nikki reaches out to Jennifer personally at some point to get her to recant the rape and take it back. At some point there's a statement that's drafted up by one of Nikki's publicists and they try to get her to sign it. She doesn't want to sign it. They offer one of her family members $500,000 if he can make her take it back. She doesn't do it. Nikki, this is hilarious. At one point, Nikki offered to record a birthday message for Jennifer's daughter, like a cameo, like, I'll give your daughter a birthday shout out video, a personal one, if you can take back the allegations. Jennifer refuses all this. She wants it to go away. She doesn't want anything to do with it. And she keeps getting harassed by them. And at some point, I don't know if this was last year or if it was earlier this year, but she goes on social media and she's like, Nikki and Kenny, leave me alone. I don't want anything to do with this. So I'm just making it clear that this isn't some woman that came out of the woodwork now that he's married Nicki Minaj and wants a lawsuit for money. Like, they came after her, okay? She was minding her own business, living her own life. And Nikki doesn't believe that Jennifer was raped. She's actually said on Instagram, replying to one of her Barbs. Barbs, by the way, one of the worst fandoms next to the Beverly Hills fans. She said that Jennifer was 14, that Kenny was 16 when it happened, and that they were in a relationship, and she's made it look like, I don't know, it was sour grapes or something. You know, they were both 16 and he was arrested for it. Now, back in 1994, again, she was harassed by like all of his friends and everything. And then he's continued harassing her now. And this is what the lawsuit states. So She says that she's not worked since May of 2020 due to suffering from depression, paranoia. She's had to move house. She's being harassed from being threatened by Nikki and Kenny. She's living in isolation now. She's terrified, and now she's going after them for damages. And she showed up on The Real. Now, did you see the interview with her on The Real? She was very convincing, don't you think? Like, she...
You can tell, like, just in the emotion in her voice, that she's still very much affected by whatever happened when they, you know, were teenagers.
And I think it's also, you know, when I first watched it, I was a bit like, she's very upset for something that happened so long ago. And then when I understood, no, wait, she's actually being harassed by these people and pursued. And again, it's like, she hasn't just come out to do the publicity tour to get money from Nikki's man. Like, I feel like she's filing this lawsuit as a way to, like, public, and coming out publicly is in, like, stop, please leave me alone. And she's probably scared for her life, because if this guy, one, rapist, two, the manslaughter thing was some sort of a shootout. So he obviously, like, has, like, gang connections and stuff. I was listening to, like, one of the hip hop radio stations talk about this. I don't know if it was, like, The Breakfast Club or Hot 97 or something. And they said that he's known for, like, having all these street connections and street credibility and stuff. So she's probably scared, like, someone's coming after who's going to, like, threaten her life if she doesn't take this back. By the way, Garcelle did a really good job interviewing her too, like, very professional. I was like, damn, like, Garcelle's good on The Real.
She really is. For somebody that doesn't have a hosting background, I thought she, you know, handled
that
really
better
well
than the other ones, I think. I think Garcelle was...
Adrian,
I don't think, was as good. Adrian was a little bit more like, I don't know, she was a little bit more touchy-feely, but when it comes to these things, you've actually got to be more, like, stoic and about the facts just to get the story out, which is what Garcelle did, and I was really impressed by. And I've got to say, though, the first thing that came in my mind when they put Jennifer on TV all of a sudden, I was like, is this because Nikki's come out as anti-vax now? Because... the reason I was suspicious was because we've known Nikki has a brother that's a pedophile. We've known Nikki married a rapist. They filed the lawsuit early August, but Jennifer had already come out publicly on social media. A lot of the blogs and stuff were talking. Like, this story was circulating, and I'm not going to say that they definitely did it because she came out as anti-vax, because I think you could also say that, look, they filed the lawsuit last month and that maybe they were just, like, scheduling and stuff. But we also do know that in Hollywood that it's like, if you go against certain narratives, like, we've learned that from the Me Too, that some of the women that wanted to come out early on against Harvey had, like, smear campaigns and stuff against them. So, I don't know.
Gavin Newsom's wife.
Yeah, well, that with Rose McGowan. Like, that was crazy. So, I don't know. I just was a bit like, and you used to work with Jenny McCarthy, right? Like,
did, yeah.
Can you tell me a bit about the story with her? Because I've actually, you know, it's funny, like, this pandemic is the first time I even cared about vaccines, but before, like, I've even, like, looked into it, but I have always been a fan of Jenny McCarthy. And I know that her anti-vax thing, she's always had that, like, people still bring it up, like, now, like, pre-pandemic, but it's never left her. People sort of always hate her about it, and I don't understand anything about those childhood vaccines. I've never looked into it. I don't know anything about it, but my interpretation with Jenny McCarthy has always been, I don't know specifically what her statements was, if she came out, like, hardline anti-vax, if she just questioned things, but I just thought she was a mother who had, you know, a son, had a child that had autism, something wrong with them. And then, I guess, out of her grief and that motherhood instinct, she did go down the hole a bit for a while trying to figure out, what's wrong with my son? How can I fix my son? We all know those were the years when she was with Jim Carrey as well, and she had the short hair, and she sort of went through something, and then she's come back out. And I believe she's come back out since, and she said she's not anti-vax. So do you have any insight into the whole Jenny McCarthy thing?
Yeah. So Jenny's never been anti-vax, even though that's the mainstream narrative. And like, and this is where it's like, if you speak out against a certain industry, you know, you have to look at like, well, then is there a smear campaign that's put into it? And she has had a number of leading publications that have just, you know, completely ripped her apart, because it's very easy for a blonde woman with boobs that pose for Playboy to be positioned as somebody that's dumb, you know, as a dumb bimbo blonde versus a mother. And so if you actually look at what her position was back in what this was like 2007, 2008, or around that time, her position was, I took my son in. He received an MMR shot. He went into cardiac arrest. He had to go into the hospital. He died. They had to revive him. And it scared the shit out of me. And then he was diagnosed with autism. This happened after, you know, a routine visit to get his shots. I was concerned as a mother.
So he hadn't been diagnosed before then. Oh, so I didn't even know that part of the story.
And her story is he was, and it's very similar to like my brother. My brother has autism, and it's how Jenny and I ended up getting connected. So a lot of these individuals, as, you know, infants, they are responding. They have, you know, language. They, you know, communicate. They, you know, I very vividly remember my brother. And again, I'm not that anti-vaccine either. I know that's how I get branded for, you know, having certain questions, but I'm not against the system. You know what I mean? But I very vividly remember my brother responding to me. I'm the oldest, so I remember him as a baby, and I remember him responding to me. And then I remember him one day just not engaging anymore, and he was just completely gone. And so a lot of parents were like, how did this just happen that my child was developing normally, and then all of a sudden they regressed and lost all of their motor skills, lost all of their ability to connect, no eye contact, they're not speaking anymore. They have video footage of them before and after. So Jenny's story, you know, she came public with it, and she's like, and Jenny's story is a little more extreme. Her son went into cardiac arrest and died and had to be revived, you know, before his autism diagnosis. That gets taken out of the retelling of her story when they try to brand her as an anti-vaccine celebrity. She's like, my son had an actual visceral reaction to this, and I was concerned as a mother, and these are my concerns. I think we should be looking into this. And so that was kind of Jenny's position of like, you know, we should be asking questions. We should look into this. I have doctors that and scientists and experts that are with me on this as well, and we have questions.
Yeah, and I, again, when you say people didn't look at her as a mother, that's how I always looked at it, because I never really looked at, because I've never even questioned a vax thing, or thought about it, or read about it, or cared about it. I just know that I had my vaxes as a kid or whatever, and I've had my first shot for coronavirus so far. But just like when I saw her and I saw how people would constantly smear her years afterwards, like maybe I understand at the time a bit people getting pissed off, but the fact that it continued to follow her, and I just thought, look, this is a mother that was at her wit's end, and that something's happened to her child, and that seemed to be, the empathy seemed to be missing from people, and the understanding of what it's like to be in that position.
Well, to correct you though, I think there was empathy at the beginning, and people were like, holy shit, this is serious. And then once there was a reaction and people started to come out and be like, that happened to my kid too, once enough people came forward with a very similar story, that's when the tone changed. And that's when she became branded as a pro anti-vaccine celebrity, you know, that doesn't, and when you, you know, put together celebrity and science, they're like, celebrities have no, you know, they don't have any position in, you know, having a opinion on vaccines. You know, I have questions.
Yeah, of course. I mean, don't even get me started with what it's like in Australia. And another celebrity that you've also worked with, not Jenny, is Courtney Stodden. And I wanted to get your take on this, right? Because Courtney Stodden has been back in the headlines with, okay, so she came out against Chrissy Teigen, right? So when Chrissy Teigen was cancelled, a lot of that was because of Courtney Stodden, because Chrissy Teigen had these, you know, really horrible, horrible tweets to Courtney Stodden. And a lot of people did. And I thought that Courtney sort of deserved her little moment in the sun to have people go, you know what, we did talk about this girl who was under 18, it was, you know, 16 at the time, in a way that was kind of inappropriate. And of course, as far as Chrissy went with like the death threats and stuff, was like way too hardcore. So I was with Courtney on that. I've always sort of been a Courtney Stodden fan because I love that kind of trashy celebrity. I remember when she came onto the scene, and then I've followed her, you know, on and off over the years, and her whole story. I've always found her very fascinating. And then when I saw her, she really milked the Chrissy thing, which I kind of, like, I get it, that you're like a tabloid celebrity. So she really ran with that and did the victim thing a lot. And then when she came out with non-binary, I'm not taking this seriously, because you're clearly not, like, she forgot it. She forgot she was non-binary in a few days, because like within a week, I think she was calling herself her again on Instagram, and she still does it. But I think things were going well for Courtney, and people sort of, the public was really liking Courtney Stodden, maybe for the first time ever, because of the Chrissy Teigen thing. And now I feel like she really jumped the shark, because now she's come out against Trisha Paytas, and this is the biggest reach. So she's gone and dug up some old clip of Trisha Paytas, because Trisha Paytas just got cancelled, which I covered on last week's episode. I mean, Trisha Paytas is always getting cancelled, but she got cancelled again because of, there's a whole thing with Trisha Paytas going on right now. Courtney dug up some old ass clip of Trisha from, I think when did Courtney first come out on the scene? Like 2011 or before that?
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, so it's a 10-year-old clip of Trisha mocking her, and she posted it on Instagram, and she put this whole gigantic caption with it. Look, let me read some of it, but it goes on. It's like a fucking novel. Most days I have to fight to get through, but once I crawl into bed, blah, 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 blah. Hang on, where are we? I'm living in a world with no air. I had to stand up for myself while being mocked by the entire world. Blah, 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 blah. A-listers, YouTube celebrities, news anchors, talk show hosts, and more tormented me. I let Trisha in. I trusted them. She's using Trisha because Trisha's non-binary too, by the way. I let Trisha in, trusted them. I even went on their podcast in 2019 as a favor. But now seeing this for the first time, I don't know who has really ever been in my corner. And then she says that we have to protect children, and hashtag bullying, hashtag Trisha Paytas. Girl, this is such a publicity grab, right?
I don't want to say that that's a publicity grab, but my experience with Courtney is that, okay, my experience with Courtney is that Courtney loves publicity, and Courtney will do anything and everything. So her and I hosted, there was a podcast that was her own podcast called This Is Courtney Stodden. I was asked to join, I mean, against my own sort of like understanding of what the project actually was, or what I was told that I was auditioning for a spot that they really wanted me to audition for, without realizing I was being greenlit onto this project as the co-host of her podcast. So she had her own podcast, and it was really just for her to dissect breaking hot like headlines of what was going on in the news that week. I was kind of like the comedic relief co-anchor that would kind of bounce off of her. The intention of this show was to kind of humanize her and show people a different side of Courtney. I did not have a pleasant experience working with her. And the impression that I got was that she definitely loved to respond to these headlines in a way to gain headlines for herself. And I did not appreciate that. That was, you know, even in a situation where she tried to say that, you know, Jenny McCarthy didn't like her and Jenny McCarthy was mean to her. And I'm like, you literally know that I, you know, have worked with this person. Like, why would you try to put me in the middle of this beef that doesn't seem real?
Also, was she saying this on air?
You're obviously trying to grab it.
Was she saying this during a podcast?
She was saying this on air. Yes, and she did the same thing with Bethany Frankel. You know, she said that Bethany Frankel bullied her and was really mean to her. And, I mean, that's not to say that people didn't bully her at that time, or not to say that people weren't mean to her at that time. You know, you have to look at it from different angles. It's like, was she the most credible person at that time? Probably not. Was it our culture to kind of make fun of that? Absolutely. Was it right? No. But that was the culture. We've grown from that. We've evolved. We've since moved on from that sort of, you know, there's climate. Also, we're in a different climate. That's very sensitive now.
Do we go too? We course corrected too far.
Yeah, but,
there's also a big difference between sort of making fun of a spectacle in the public eye and then doing what Chrissy Teigen did with, you know, you deserve to die, take a dirt nap.
Right.
So big difference.
Exactly. Big difference, huge difference. And so, you know, the incidents that she was bringing up, in my head, being so keen to this world, I knew what she was doing. I knew that she was trying to make headlines. I knew that she knew that the network would put out a press release if she said something juicy and that they would try to make that a headline to gain her press. But like, to me, it was just Courtney or, you know, I apologize if I don't refer to her as they, them.
We're not doing that.
I'm basing this. I'm not intentionally trying to disrespect Courtney, but my experience working with Courtney was that it wasn't pleasant. She was always late. She was always under the influence. She didn't care to do her job to the point where I quit. And I was like, I cannot work with this person anymore. And the show got pulled altogether because there wasn't even anybody to help her make this show, you know, remotely.
Oh, so you ended up quitting.
Structured.
So were you kind of friendly at all? Like, oh, let's go get a drink after work or anything like that.
I have had a lot of sex with men, so I'm good at faking it. But I will say we didn't have the opportunity to genuinely connect. We tried because, you know, for the sake of us working together, it was definitely something that was attempted, but Courtney and I just did not gel. You know, I think Courtney wanted me to be like this, you know, twinky, you know, gay sidekick BFF, and I'm nobody's fucking sidekick. I'm the main star of my own show. And I very much, I don't know how you feel about this, but I very much try to fight that stereotype of the gay, you know, the GBF, the gay best friend, the gay sidekick. You know, I think that it's such a offensive and derogatory or demeaning and emasculating, you know, role that gay men have to play in our culture and in society. And to me, I wasn't going to fulfill that role. Like Courtney would try to be like, you know, I want you to come in and wear like a bow tie and be more flamboyant. That way you can be like my, you know, we can be like the simple life with Nicole in Paris. And I'm like, I'm my own fucking person. I have my own podcast. I don't need to be here. I'm literally doing this because these people are begging me to do a favor to this podcast. And, you know, we did not gel. And it was partially because she was not professional to work with. And it was a lot of that attention-seeking behavior. And I was like, I don't want to be dragged into that type of, you know.
Yeah. Thing. And, you know, that speaks kind of to the almost like the corporate celebrity podcast world, in that they often just find these people and then they just go, oh, look, Zach's a good producer, or this person's a good producer or a good co-host. Let's just pair you together and you'll have a hit show. And it's like, doesn't really work like that. Like, yet.
Oh, let me tell you, they weren't even paying me. I wasn't even getting paid. It was like, it was not worth my time.
So you're like, fuck this. Yeah, I know. There's just a lot of really bad celebrity podcasts out there. I mean, I've ranted about it before. That's how they get made. People don't realize. They just, some studio goes, okay, look, we have, I'm trying to fucking think of some loser from some show I'm getting. We have someone, Johnny from Love is Blind or something, and then we're going to put them in with our producer, and you're going to have a show answering dating questions, and then they last like 10 episodes, and then they fade because the...
Yeah, the network brought in Courtney and Chad Johnson from The Bachelor, Bad Chad. So the network brought the two of them in because they thought, you know, controversy sells. They'll say buzzy stuff. We'll be able to send out press releases and make this big, huge for the network. And then it just completely
I don't know if I heard Chad's podcast or if I heard him on some, I mean, I'm sure it's defunct now, but I heard him on someone's podcast or I heard someone on his, and it was like so unprofessional. He didn't know what he was doing. He was just, he just thought he would just show up and talk into a mic and make a bunch of money.
Yeah.
And then when they realize, no, it's actually a lot of work and it's really not like that, then they go, fuck this, and then they give up.
Yeah, people don't realize that, like, podcasting actually takes, like, a lot more than just showing up.
All right, look, we have gone for so long. I had other topics. I'm cutting them because this is, we've really mentioned it all. Thank you so much for coming on. I love talking to you. Give yourself a plug. You're good. You're the plugging king. Plug the No Filter Wine, the podcast, the Instagrams, everything.
Yeah, so I host a podcast called Hashtag No Filter with Zach Peter. We release episodes 3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It's available on all podcast platforms as well as YouTube, so you can watch the full podcast at youtube.com/justplainzach. I also have a wine brand that's a Housewives-inspired rosé, so we have 5 fun different designs. One crisp, fizzy rosé that's 14% alcohol by volume, so you'll get Litty City, but less than a gram of sugar, so you won't get hungover. It's available at nofilterwine.com. Each of the cans is designed around iconic Housewives moments, so we have I'm Ready to Mention It All, I Stole Kim's Goddamn House, Now Tell Me Who, Go and Check Me Boo, Drag Me, I Dare You. So they're just fun cans inspired by different iconic Housewives moments, and it's available at nofilterwine.com.
Yes, guys, definitely subscribe to his pod. Also, check out the YouTube channel if you prefer that. You put all the episodes on YouTube, and you really are doing a great job at breaking down the facts of the Erica thing, and you have all of the, like you said, you had the bankruptcy person on, and you have the lawyers. You even had Ronald Richards on, but like early on. You have them all on, and you're getting the facts, and we need the facts about the Erica case out there.